Hello, and welcome to How to Heritage, where we talk about and have conversations around issues pertaining to heritage transformations. This podcast is part of the Heritage Transformation Network at Uppsala University. The network is funded by CIRCUS, Center for Integrated Research on Culture and Society. However, the content and views expressed here belong to me and neither the network nor Uppsala University. My name is Dan Seidel, and I am a visiting researcher in systematic theology in the Center for Theology, Ecology, and Culture at the Stockholm School of Theology. My research explores different ways to practice theology in a secular and post-secular cultural context. I am trained as an art historian, focusing on modern and contemporary artistic practices and theoretical discourses, and have spent a significant part of my career as a curator at a university art museum in the United States. But my work over the last few years has been oriented toward religious studies and theology. It explores ways that art history, art theory, museology, and curatorial practices could be deployed in order to develop new ways to think about theology as a creative discourse. I suggest that theology curates relationships between the visible and the invisible, and does so while generating images of faith, hope, and love, and that this practice might offer creative ways for responding to our violent and fragile world. My engagement with heritage studies, however, is a quite recent discovery, one which emerged only after I arrived in Sweden just a few months ago. The American abstract expressionist painter Barnett Newman once said that, quote, "sculpture is what you bump into when you back up to see a painting," end of quote. I feel like heritage studies is what I accidentally bumped into while recurating theology. And so my engagement with the Heritage Transformation Network here at Uppsala University is an expression of my ignorance and curiosity, as well as a growing conviction that heritage discourse and practice will become a crucial part of my research moving forward. In what follows, I offer a broad overview of my theological research, marking where it bumps up against concepts of heritage, especially its creative potential as a performative practice and how it emerges as a consequence of other actions as I consider theology from a museological and curatorial perspective. My work is motivated by the question, a question that Jewish theologian Martin Buber once asked. Theology, how do you do that? So I'm experimenting with different ways of doing it. In short, I want to think about theology as a creative practice and explore how it can show up in other academic discourses or appear as a form of cultural criticism or cultural theory, and resonate with other disciplines and practices. In short, I am interested in exploring how theology as a creative practice of thought might be liberated from its traditional locations in the church and in academic departments of theology in order to scavenge and forage and partner and collaborate with other academic disciplines, other forms of creative practices of thought, and join the collective effort to respond to the urgencies that press upon us. I want to keep theology as a discourse and as a practice of thought an open question. And so I'm interested in trying to uproot theology from departments of theology and from church dogmas and confessions in order to let its energy and its artifacts roam, drift, and wander. My interest is thus not with what theology is per se, extending or reestablishing its relevance, or protecting or consolidating whatever authority it might still have. It is rather what it could be, and could be in a post-Christian, post-secular, and perhaps even post-theological society that desperately needs new resources to think otherwise, to think the unthinkable, and to create new concepts and new images for a volatile, violent, and yet fragile world. I attempt to generate this shift by treating theological concepts as material artifacts that invite also a different way of experiencing them. What I have discovered is that how I think about art and religion, art theory and theology, is shaped not only by my training as an art historian, but through my experience as a curator. I think these concepts and relations curatorially, that is, in selecting and presenting images, concepts, and artifacts in particular relationships for an audience that generates unique experiences and in a distinctive institutional framework. And the conceptual place that I attempt to effect this gesture in this study to build this experiment is the art museum. My current theological research began in earnest in October 2021 at the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York City, as I walked through the galleries of Surrealism Beyond Borders, an immense exhibition that explored the international scope of the avant-garde movement founded by André Breton in Paris in the 1920s, I encountered a sprawling, 30-foot-long accordion-like drawing on perforated computer paper, initiated by artist, poet, and musician Ted Jones in 1976. It was produced according to the rules of a surrealist game called The Exquisite Corpse, which invited participants to contribute words or images without knowing those of the previous contributor. The result would be an assemblage of words or images liberated from the intentions of any one single artist, thus evolving its own creative logic as it passed from one to another. This work, entitled Long Distance, was circulated among 132 participants through Africa, Europe, and Mexico until 2005, 2 years after Jones' death. Long Distance had for some time ceased its wandering through the circuitry of artistic and creative practice when I encountered it, having assumed a quiet life in retirement stored away in a private collection for many years. But its loan to the exhibition and subsequent public display at the museum transformed it, giving it another kind of life, reactivating an energy that opened it up to resonances and relationships, allowing it to give and draw energy from other nearby artifacts, works of art, as well as the didactic signage that were on display in the museum. Presented on a long pedestal and protected by a plexiglass vitrine, this itinerant artifact that had wandered among and lived with artists throughout the world for nearly 30 years, feeding on and contributing to their creative energy, was now displayed like a relic from a martyr or the body of a saint, now available for viewers to venerate or gawk at, or for it to insinuate itself into our emotional landscapes in unexpected ways. Art historian Amy Knight Powell calls this energy that these works generate promiscuity. She writes, quote, "Form is too promiscuous to remain faithful to its author's intentions. The decontextualizing and recontextualizing space of the museum merely facilitates what was, one way or another, bound to happen." End of quote. The Art Museum is the quintessential location to activate such promiscuity, surrounded by other objects and the desire of viewers to connect with, to become other than merely remnants of the past. On display, they appear strangely alive, or at least not dead, serving as agents for generating new ideas, concepts, and experiences in the present. And that was precisely the effect that Long Distance had on me that night. That artifact and my response to it got me thinking about theology and the way that theology's concepts, its artifacts, are displayed in the instruments that are used. That is, its own pedestals, vitrines, lighting, and staging that enable it to become visible to its intended audiences. I've come to realize that what affected me about Long Distance and what I wanted to try to apply to theology had two distinct but related components. The first had to do with creative practices of the artist involved in making this artifact, which, although initiated by a single maker, acquired many collaborators, circulating throughout the world, inspiring, burdening, annoying, increasing, expanding, and unfolding with no clear end and no single guiding human intentionality, for which the result is something called art. And so it defied conventional notions of what a work of art consisted. The question then is not what art is or should be, but what art could be. And so long distance got me thinking about what theology could be as a creative practice. That is, the forms it could take, rather than considering if this or that conformed to what theology is or should be. In short, could I produce an artifact that would be considered theology without being able to point exactly to what made it so? The second, closely related but slightly different consideration, had to do with how it worked as a museum artifact, dislodged from its historical and creative milieu and the intentionality of its contributors, and represented in a museum exhibition. The exhibition as a medium of thought and experience, a discourse, initiates a process of simultaneously historicizing the artifact, increasing the distance between its milieu and the present, while reactivating it in the present under different conditions. This museological gesture affects another life, a kind of afterlife, through its display with and in relation to other historical objects, artifacts, concepts, and ideas considered to be part of a particular cultural heritage relating to the innovations in the history of modern art in the 20th century in Europe and the United States. In the case of Long Distance, it is the Surrealism exhibition at the Met and its cultural heritage as an international avant-garde community of painters, poets, and musicians. But its effect had less to do with its role in an historical movement in the past than in how it thrust itself into my thinking about theology in the present, radically shifting my perspective and thus generating new theological questions and new theological concepts and ideas. My research is an attempt to replicate a similar artifact for theology with such an afterlife as I experienced with Long Distance, by at once creating and establishing an historical distance with theology as a constellation of historical material artifacts that also might be able to generate another kind of life in the present, one quite different from its role in the past. And I am becoming increasingly aware that this museological and curatorial gesture must consider the role that heritage as a creative practice and as an unintended result of treating theological concepts as material artifacts can play in this project. And I'm curious to see if this museological approach to theological concepts might offer a productive alternative to other forms of theological analysis, like genealogical treatments of theological concepts, which, for example, trace a concept's shifts and changes through its reception and linguistic use. This project, then, is a curatorial thought experiment. It dislodges theology from its two primary display apparatuses, the church, which serves religious beliefs, and the academy, which treats theology as texts to critique, to analyze, and often with skepticism. I display theology in a third space, the art museum, which is a secular institution, like the academy, that nevertheless sacralizes its artifacts, like the church. It also deploys a particular kind of mobile visual attention, which museum studies scholar Tony Bennett calls a sideways glancing dialogism, in which he argues the roles of viewing, speaking, and listening are mingled complexly with one another. That could generate curiosity, resonance, and wonder among these viewers. To put theology in an art museum, to subject it to visual attention, if only temporarily and in theory, is to treat its concepts and images not only as material artifacts, but as material artifacts from the past and things with edges, that is, as things that can be looked at, observed, walked around, even ignored. But to do so is not to be done with them, to take them out of discursive circulation, banish them to irrelevance, or to make them available only for nostalgic fetishizing about an idealized and mythical religious past or cultural heritage. This staging of theology museologically is to conjure the energy of heritage, which reanimates artifacts through a particular kind of distancing. This curating, which is also a form of conjuring, generates heritage that affects artifacts, that activates them, in this case, theology, in a new context, in order to observe how they might behave. It is to curate it into a different discursive and experiential circulation, a museal circulation of the visual, aesthetic, affective, melancholic, and imaginative. Moreover, these artifacts of theology, for example, concepts that I will display in my project, such as sovereignty, grace, belief, transcendence, and creatio ex nihilo, are displayed in relationship to other material artifacts, such as works of art, like the Northern Renaissance Ghent altarpiece by Jan and Hubert van Eyck in Belgium, that is a popular pilgrimage site at St. Bavo's Cathedral, or Kurt Schwitter's Merzbau construction in Hanover, Germany, that no longer exists, having been destroyed by Allied bombing raids during World War II. And it also includes concepts from other discourses like art theory and art history, curatorial studies, and museology. But the art museum is a complex institutional apparatus. It is neither a neutral space nor culturally marginal. The social, political, and cultural friction that it generates is part of how the artifact works on viewers. It has a secularizing, sacralizing, and absorptive force that is entangled with the Western European Enlightenment project and woven with empire, racism, and colonialism. Modern subjectivity, observation and experience between a subject and an object, was forged in the Enlightenment in part through its cultivation in the museum, which museum theorist Donald Preziosa calls, quote, one of the premier epistemological technologies of the Enlightenment, end of quote. Bruno Latour and Peter Weibel also observe that, quote, the exhibition is a highly artificial assemblage of objects, installations, people, and arguments, which could not reasonably be gathered anywhere else. This means that it is an ideal medium for experimentation, and especially for addressing the current crisis of representation, end of quote. What the exhibition does then is activate the spatial dimension of knowledge and experience, putting its artifacts, images, concepts, and texts into relationships that defy linear progression or readings. What they offer experientially, creatively, spatially, is greater than merely the sum of their individual parts. Rather than being enlisted to serve a constant and continuous argument or a local logical progression, an exhibition activates the relationships between and among specific concepts, ideas, texts, and artifacts, opening up different ways to experience them as embodiments in space and time, even generating particular iterations of space and time, what theorist Karen Barad called space-time matterings. While the exhibition offers a kind of argument, embodies or enacts a thesis, it offers multiple ways to interact with its contents, given the experience it generates that is not unfolded through reading, but through active and selective visual attention of the viewer. For example, the absorptive or contemplative reader sitting at a desk alone, hunched over a book, following sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, page by page, chapter by chapter. In contrast, the exhibition viewer moves with and among others in a space filled with artifacts, as their gaze moves across, around, even past specific or clusters of works, and also among didactic text, to be read, but to be read in a different experiential manner, as they exercise their freedom and agency to attend to what catches their visual interest. And so, the exhibition becomes the form that theological thought takes in my work. I have found the philosopher Jean-François Léotard to be helpful as a way to justify this rather complicated literary device, whose path-breaking exhibition, Les Immatériaux, which was on view at the Georges Pompidou Center in Paris in the mid-1980s, was an attempt to do philosophy through a public exhibition. In their book-length study on the implications of this exhibition, Stockholm-based curator Daniel Birnbaum and Stockholm-based philosopher Sven-Olof Wallenstein ask, quote, could there be a way to understand or rather do philosophy spatially so that the exhibition medium would present a possible solution to the problem of conceptual articulations? End of quote. Moreover, a good book, they suggest, is thus not a book at all, but an exhibition. This project, however, is not necessarily a book that wants to be an exhibition, but a book that behaves like a floor plan for an exhibition. Those diagrams of exhibition spaces that curators use to plot out where the artifacts, including the didactic labels, will be placed. And in fact, the main part of my current research is organized as a floor plan. Each chapter is referred to as a room of curated artifacts, images, and concepts in which a reader might move through in different ways. Each room bears a title that relates to the museum: drift, vitrine, tour, dust, storage, that frames the theological explorations and conjures the concepts of heritage in distinctive ways. This movement from an exhibition in space and time, a product of curatorial practice, to thinking of the exhibition as a concept from which to think the curatorial has been facilitated by the work of theorist Jean-Paul Martinon. And this project is an attempt to smuggle the theoretical discourse on the curatorial into theology. I find an interesting resonance between the curatorial and how I envision a theology operating in a post-secular, even post-theological context. Martinon observes that the curatorial as a mode of thought is the, quote, ultimate scavenger of disciplines, and that curating can only be taught in fragments borrowed from other disciplines, end of quote. Significantly, it is its amateurishness and at times even apparent incompetence that becomes its chief virtue. For as Martinon writes, curating is really about broken comprehension, ambivalent competence, unhinged knowledge, unsystematic skill, arbitrary proficiency, accidental mastery, and casual expertise, end of quote. Moreover, the curatorial then never coheres into a disciplinary narrative and needs other disciplines in order to articulate and justify itself. My museo curatorial experiment attempts to view theology in those improvisational and creatively transactional dependent terms. Moreover, for Martinon, the curatorial as a theoretical discourse, a form of thinking, is distinguished from curatorial practice in particular ways. In Theses in the Philosophy of Curating, he writes that the curatorial is a disruptive activity which disrupts received knowledge. Perhaps the curatorial might serve to disrupt and destabilize what we understand by theology. I have in mind the work of heritage studies researcher Caitlin DeSilvey, whose concept of curated decay offers a path to think about allowing certain theological concepts to deteriorate or pass away in order to enable them to live on in different ways in the present. To treat theological concepts as material artifacts invites the concepts of preservation and heritage from the perspective of how they are to be conserved and the diverse ways that they might be preserved or allowed to deteriorate. This disruptive potential of the curatorial also encourages this project to practice a form of smuggling and exchange that plays with the creative potential of heritage, that deploys its creative relationship to the past in distinctive ways. I smuggle theological concepts and images into the art museum space, treating them as material artifacts to observe and how they behave among art objects, how they become visible, and are attended to in a different discursive and display apparatus than the church or the academy. But this smuggling also works in another way. I treat non-theological concepts and objects, like the exhibition, the curatorial, the vitrine, dust, tour, as well as, for example, Guy Debord's concepts of dérive and détournement, and Walter Benjamin's concept of distraction. I treat all of these concepts as theological concepts. And I treat Benjamin's famous essay, The Work of Art in the Age of Its Technical Reproducibility, from which his concept of distraction is articulated as part of art's new exhibition value, as a theological text. Moreover, I treat the prologue of Nicholas of Cusa's On the Vision of God, which was written in 1453, as a curatorial text. This gesture resembles a kind of Duchampian practice, which amounts to exploring how and in what ways non-art objects, urinals, bicycle wheels on stools, combs and shovels, the very objects Marcel Duchamp exhibited in the early 20th century, how they can function as works of art under certain conditions and circumstances. My desire to study art, art criticism, and art theory was driven by the desire to explore the question, what is art? And my response ultimately is art can be anything, depending on certain conditions and circumstances. So too is my answer to the question, Buber's question about theology. Theology can be anything, can be done in any way, provided it takes place under certain conditions and circumstances. But what are those conditions and circumstances? This project is a first attempt to explore them. And so perhaps my project resembles Duchamp's ready-made, a non-theological artifact inserted into a theological institutional context to observe what will happen. But as you might know, Duchamp didn't just sit back and observe. He actively worked to establish and cultivate those certain conditions and circumstances. And in that context, I have discovered heritage can play an increasingly productive role. And that is why I have and will continue to be part of the conversations that take place within the Heritage Transformation Network.